listening to Dean Blundell and Company. Download the Sportsnet app in the App Store. Then listen online and on your phone. Toronto Sports Radio. Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Hey there, 701 Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Dean Blundell and Company, Ben Ennis, David Bastel, Ryan Favreau with you. It is 23 degrees in the city of Toronto. Rain wrapping up, wet morning though. Thunderstorms across the area going up to a high of 32 today, 31 tomorrow, 31 Wednesday, 29 Thursday, 27 Friday. So another hot week, but the rain appears to be over for the day. Lots to get to in the next couple hours. Blue Jays winners over the Mariners yesterday. Drew Storen no longer a Blue Jay. Johnny Vegas a winner at the Canadian Open. Baseball Hall of Fame over the weekend as well. You ever been to Cooperstown, Dave?
Yes, I have. Yes. What year was it? I never went for the actual ceremony. I just went to check out the facilities.
Yeah,
stayed
me too.
The weekend.
Oh, you stayed the weekend.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome, too. Did a bed and breakfast, too. I recommend bed and breakfast. Don't do the little hotels or something.
Right.
But do the bed and breakfast. Everything's walking distance, and the ballpark is seldomly used.
Yeah.
It's awesome, too.
Oh, it's just like a sleepy little town. It is amazing.
It totally is.
Like,
yeah.
364 days of the year, there's nobody there.
No.
This is the biggest weekend, obviously, in that city's year.
Yes.
But it's tiny. And it's also not near anything.
Drivable from Toronto, too, by the way.
It is very drivable from Toronto. But you know what? It's not a good idea to do, because I can tell you, because I did it, is say you're like going to New York City. And you're like, oh, I'm going to New York City. Cooperstown's in New York State. Must be on the way. It's not. It's not on the way. Don't do that. Don't go Cooperstown, New York City, because that's going to add number of hours to your drive to New York City. It's like in the middle of absolute nowhere. It really is.
When you're driving down there, you go through so many back roads and paths that you're like, I'm not sure if I'm going the right way.
Right.
I'm not sure. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, there's the little sign.
And there's the one restaurant and the one bed and breakfast, and the one shop. Yeah, it's an amazing place. If you ever get a chance to go, you should do it. And especially if you ever get a chance to go on a weekend, like Hall of Fame induction weekend over this weekend. We'll get to that. Plenty more. Just a second. Time for your update for your Ontario Subaru dealer. Blue Jays trying to salvage the final game of their three-game series against the Mariners at Rogers Centre yesterday. Offense very much at a premium.
Blue Jays here trying to beat Seattle for the first time. Ball, fly ball, right center field, hit well. That's heading for the wall. That's up, and there she goes. The Blue Jays are in flight, leading Seattle 1-0 as Edwin has just passed Vernon Wells for third all-time in Blue Jays history with his 224th home run.
Yeah, not a bad little season for the pending free agent. Edwin Encarnacion, 27 home runs now this season. That was enough, actually. Just that home run for Jay Happ make that, as the lefty went six innings, gave up one hit. No runs as the Blue Jays win 2-0. Happ now 13-3 this season, putting them one behind the American League leaders.
Well, it means a lot. I mean, it's, you know, a testament to our team and a testament to kind of, for myself, it feels good just to keep working, you know, I don't know if to reinvent, but just keep working to get better every day and figure out how, you know, what works for you.
Jay Happ, an incredible, incredible season, an incredible signing for Ross Atkins, Mark Shapiro preseason.
I saw this interesting stat on good old Twitter. Since the Mariners traded Jay Happ mid-2015, Jay Happ is 20-5 with a 2.88 ERA and 30 starts with better K per nine and walk per nine ratios than he ever had previously. He's been unbelievable. I didn't think he was this good. I didn't think we were getting, here in Toronto, Pittsburgh Pirates, Jay Happ, and we have.
Yeah,
and
well,
it's awesome.
Pretty close to that guy.
Right.
You know, it's amazing. You mentioned that yeah, ever since he left the Mariners. Last week, talking about the Mariners and some of the total miscues, total screw-ups they've had on the trade market. Of course, the big one, Oh, they got Eric Bedard, the good Canadian kid, gave up Adam Jones, Chris Tillman, George Sherrill in one of the worst trades in the last 20 years because Tillman's, okay, he's been up and down, but either way, he's no worse than a third starter for any team.
Having a good year this year.
Yeah, he is. He's having one of his good years. And Adam Jones is an all-star. Like, imagine how different the last 5 years of Mariners baseball looks if those guys are still on that team.
It's kind of what you mentioned. It's kind of been a tradition in Seattle where they bolster up via free agency, you know, trades, so forth, that every year is supposed to be a Mariners year, and it never has been. Mm-hmm. And you know what? It's not a bad roster. It's a very good offensive roster.
Yeah.
But you know what? It's a tough American League West, and nonetheless, they seem to self-destruct along the way, and right now they are not winning this division.
Yeah, they're 6.5 games back of the Rangers now for first in the American League West. They were without Felix Hernandez for a good portion of time. He's back, though. His last start wasn't a good one. But yeah, the Rangers still lead it. They're fading, though. The Astros just 2.5 games back. As far as the American League East is concerned, here's where the Blue Jays stand now after the weekend, losing 2 out of 3 to the Seattle Mariners. The Red Sox only able to take 2 of 3 from the Twins, and boy, they were lucky to do that as they blew a lead in that David Price start. So the Red Sox now a game and a half back of the Baltimore Orioles for first in the division. Blue Jays 3 games back. Blue Jays still in a playoff spot, though, in the second wild card, but it's by the slimmest of margins. They lead the Astros by just a half game, and the Astros have a game in hand. So the Astros and Blue Jays essentially tied for that second wild card. And as much as it feels like, boy, the Blue Jays shouldn't be battling for a playoff stretch, for a playoff spot down the stretch, because they are so good, because the pitching has been so good and the offense, and they're getting Jose Bautista back. Look at the teams on the outside of the playoffs looking in right now. The Astros are one of them. The Tigers, with all the money they've spent and the big offense that they have. Hey, the Yankees have come around recently. They're a couple of games over 500, just 4.5 games back. Oh, and then a game and a half back of the Yankees. You got your defending World Series champion, Kansas City Royals. And the Blue Jays, after this homestand is done, they go to Houston and Kansas City. So you want to talk about big stretches of the season, because the Blue Jays get the Padres, then they get the Orioles, then they get the Astros and Kansas City on the road.
And, well, you just look at the American League standings and how many teams are really out of it. There's only 4.
Yeah.
And there's as you mentioned, the long list of good teams, and I guess this is why, if you agree, having a second wild card is a good or a bad thing for baseball.
I think it's great.
I think it is.
I think it's fantastic. Yeah, and you kind of look at it, because right now, if you look at Baltimore, Boston, Toronto, let's say Houston and Texas, one of those teams will not make the postseason. And you sit there and you go, really?
Yeah.
Who's not going to make it? Because, like you said, Houston looks like they're right on the tail of Texas. So one of those teams is going to win that division. And then Baltimore, Boston, Toronto, all those teams have played very well. That's a very competitive division. The Yankees, believe it or not, are still in this.
Yeah.
And I did not ever picture them being part of this scenario right now. But
the most surprising one is the Royals a game under 500. Are they the biggest disappointment in baseball?
I thought.
And who cares, because they won.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, flags fly forever, right? Yeah.
Right.
You get a 5-year grace period at least if you're the Kansas City Royals. Yeah, that starting rotation, they're trying to do the same thing with the rotation, right? Where you have guys that are okay, but you just try and carry it to that great bullpen. Chris Young's been an absolute tire fire this year. Edison Volquez, same sort of deal. And they've been so hit by the injury bug. Like, Mike Moustakas out for the entire season. Alex Gordon just recently returning. Like, they've had some serious, serious injuries on that team. So, yeah, you wonder if that's for real. But we consider them in it just because they're the defending World Series champs. They're only a half game up on the White Sox. I don't consider the White Sox in
it.
Which is amazing to say. But, yeah, and the Yankees a game and a half up of the Royals. I don't know where the delineation mark is, but it's coming up soon, obviously, with the non-waiver trade deadline at August 1st. Guys or teams need to make a decision as to whether they're in it or not. Maybe it is the Yankees or the Royals, I guess, just because the defending champs. But there's so many teams they have to climb over in 6 games back of that second wild card. You want to talk about the positives of the second wild card, what it does? One of the negatives is there's just not a lot of sellers. Like, if you want to go out and get better through trade means, like, there's just not a lot of teams that are saying, our best pieces, we're going to move on from them and acquire young assets, because there's so many teams, like you said, only four teams in the American League not in it right now.
Right, and we're a week away now from the trade deadline. So next Monday is when it all happens, and it's a pretty big week for Shapiro and Atkins.
Yeah.
Because a lot of Jays fans still unsure whether they trust this new management. I don't know if that's fair or not. Probably not. So what do they have to do to add to this team in the next week? Personally, as a Jays fan, I just want to see a bullpen arm or two.
Yeah.
And hopefully Brett Cecil, we saw yesterday, that's the real Brett Cecil we have down the stretch. And then we
What's the priority then? If you're looking at the shopping list, what's 1, 2, and 3 if there is a 1, 2, 3?
If Aaron Sanchez is in the rotation the rest of the season, which I think he should be, and if the Blue Jays finally relent in that and allow him to, okay, you know, baby him, give him, you know, try and bring Drew Hutchison up on occasion to push his starts back and limit his innings down the stretch. But if he's in the rotation the rest of the season and starting into the playoffs, then I think it's clearly a bullpen arm or two, like you said.
Favre. Over an outfielder.
Yeah, because, I mean, Jose Bautista's back, and I guess we don't know how much outfield he's going to play when he returns. Michael Saunders in left, though, and Kevin Pillar in center. Yeah, I mean, Ezekiel Carrera, I think maybe the ship is starting to... we're starting to move on from Ezekiel Carrera as a viable everyday major leaguer. It was a nice couple of weeks he had, and he's a fine fourth outfielder, a guy that can start for you in a pinch. I'd probably like an upgrade there if you can do it.
Backup catcher position? We saw this weekend what Josh Tolley brings.
Yeah. Well actually.
$1.57, by the way.
He was good over the weekend. Scored a run yesterday. Had a big double.
He was 1 for 8.
Yeah. He's had a big double. Like I said, I don't know. If Russell Martin's out for an extended period of time, you're in big trouble. We haven't talked about that either. Russell Martin with one of those stupid baseball injuries.
A sauna.
He was in a sauna. He left it on too long or was too hot and then got out of it and slipped in the shower and hurt his knee. He was supposed to return yesterday and wasn't back. So maybe that's a concern.
You're concerned about the health of Russell Martin, but yeah. Is going to acquire another catcher.
You're not
going to
get Russell Martin in return.
So. Yeah, if he goes down, the Jays are in a tough spot, but so is every other team in the American League. If they're starting, most backup catchers suck.
Yep.
Right? So
bad as Josh Tolley?
Yeah.
Close.
Last year there wasn't a bad backup catcher here.
It was a luxury, though. It was outside the norm of.
I think also people overrate the year that Deonor Navarro had. He was not a world beater. I think he had an OPS under 700. And this year he's having a horrible year.
But he controlled Marco Estrada, which was very, very good. Almost breakthrough for Marco Estrada, considering his age.
But we learned that was, you know, anybody that believed that he was the reason for Marco Estrada's resurgence, we all learned, just Marco Estrada's good because he was good with Russell Martin this year, too.
Right. Nope. But Dave's right, though. He had a lot of timely hits, and he was a nice coming off late in games.
Switch hitter, nice guy to have.
Do we really have that this year? Is Colabello going to come up and play a factor down the stretch? Well, maybe, unless it's Colabello from last year can kind of find himself and be a factor.
Gregorio.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Missed that drop.
Yeah, and he's not, but he's not even part of the postseason roster.
Yeah.
But that shouldn't matter. Getting there is so tough. We just listed the standings and looked at it for how long, and it's scary. So just get to the playoffs. However you get there. I just hope he can find his swing because Justin Smoke has lost his. But
Smoke is Justin Smoke. He's having a Justin Smoke year.
But we started this with what's the priority. To me, it's the bullpen. It's just funny with all the trade rumors you hear. The last thing we hear are names of relievers the Jays are linked to, really.
There's so many of them out there.
But we hear starting pitcher, we hear outfielders. Yeah. And I don't think that should be the number one priority. But it all depends. And here we go back to it all depends on the Aaron Sanchez decision when they're going to make that.
I couldn't be more sick of having that discussion.
But
too.
It's the key conversation.
I know. It's so important.
I know.
But I feel like I've said everything that can possibly be said about Aaron Sanchez.
Is that going to happen in the next 2 weeks? Because it has to happen soon.
If he's going to the bullpen, it's got to happen like after today, maybe. Because, by the way, he does get the call against Colin Ray, 7 o'clock, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Sportsnet Now. Padres in town for 3, and not a ton of history between the Blue Jays and Padres, but as mentioned, plenty of trade speculation. Andrew Cashner, Melvin Upton Jr., the Blue Jays have even been mentioned as one of the favorites to land those two guys. Jose Bautista also expected to make his return off the disabled list tonight. Might go back to the top of the lineup for the Blue Jays, but expect to do DH plenty down the stretch because he's not at 100%, and he's been pretty frank and upfront about that during his rehab stint in AAA Buffalo. The Drew Storen era now officially over in Toronto as well. The righty designated for assignment before yesterday's game, which means Jays now have 10 days to either trade or release him. Here's GM Ross Atkins.
Every decision, there's more facets to it. So obviously accountable for that, and that's not the outcome you're looking for. It's not the outcome that Drew Storen's looking for either. Right out of the gates, he was in an unfamiliar territory, and then as guys pitched better than him and he was moved into a role where he was going to be needed earlier in a game and in more versatile stints, that was uncharted waters for him. That was one aspect of it, and I think another aspect of it is fastball is just a little bit down.
Yeah, that seems
like
the bigger one.
More to it than that.
No, there really isn't. That's about it. Drew Storen had an ERA of 6.21 in 38 games in his Blue Jays career.
Pretty good sample size.
Yeah, I mean he's a reliever, so I mean it's you got to perform immediately. 38 games is plenty, and the Blue Jays moved him off high leverage situations when they couldn't win a game with a lead in the eighth inning early in the season. They did a great job filling that hole with a guy who, with an ERA over 5 with one of the worst teams in baseball, acquiring Jason Grilley. He's now good. Like, you feel comfortable when Jason Grilley
very good
comes into a game. It's amazing.
Yeah. Yesterday's a very good example. That's what the Jays need. If you could package up what they did yesterday with their bullpen, bang, 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 to finish the game, that's exactly what they want. And Grilley's turned into that eighth inning guy. It's a role that I did not see him, I guess, aspiring to when they picked him up for literally nothing from the Braves. I thought he was going to be a 6-7 guy at best. He has lost some of his steam that he's had earlier in his career, but he's been a very good situational guy for the team. And he almost seems like a really good clubhouse guy, too.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
The personality kind of jumps out at you, and this is the kind of guy they need.
To golf we go. Another wild finish to the Canadian Open at Glen Abbey. Jonathan Vegas wrapping up an 8-under round of 64 to sit at 12-under for the tournament, but there were plenty of other golfers with a chance to at least force a playoff with a birdie or an eagle on the short par 5 18th. Nobody could do it, though. Eventually, coming down to Brent Snedeker, needed to hole his bunker shot for eagle.
Tried to. And now Vegas can celebrate his second career victory.
Fantastic. He wouldn't have thought he'd win that outright at 12-under when he finished.
I didn't. Jonathan Vegas, your 2016 Canadian Open champ. Ian Leggett coming up after the bottom of the hour, co-host of the golf show. Plenty more on the Canadian Open. Dustin Johnson finishing with a group of two others, finishing one shot back. DJ had a chance to tie. Very makeable chip on 18. That one came up short, but there's really no question about it. If you're a Canadian, the story of the week for you was amateur Jared Dutoit, playing in the final group on Sunday, shot a 1-under 71, finishing at 9-under. That's in a tie for ninth. He'll join us at 8:30 this morning. So he's an amateur, doesn't get to take home this giant novelty check, but if he had, would have been $159,300. But at least he can call himself an amateur. He's playing for the love of the game.
You got it. Wear that Canadian flag. Wow, what a great start to his eventual PGA Tour career. He'll remember it forever. And he kind of surprised all of us jumping off the page and putting himself back or in it on Saturday. Because tell you the truth, you start off well with a 67, but everybody seemed to eat up that course. The conditions kind of changed over the weekend. He was there on Sunday, well, for a little bit anyway.
Yeah, I think he was very pleased and should be with that result because the rest of the big-name Canadians didn't exactly perform all that well. Graham Dillette, David Hearn didn't even make the cut. Cooperstown we go. Pretty good Hall of Fame class, if you ask me. Ken Griffey Jr., Mike Piazza taking their place among the greats in the game. Griffey sitting sixth all-time with 630 homers.
I stand up here humbled and overwhelmed. The last couple months have been a blur. From the call from the hall to the calls from all the Hall of Famers that are sitting here behind me. I can't describe how that feels, but I can tell you that I was more nervous talking to them than I am now.
He even rocked the backwards hat Is Ken Griffey Jr. going to go down as one of the best left-handed swingers of all time? Best outfielders as well.
Absolutely. 13-time All-Star. I'll always remember the swing, though. The style of swing. It's almost video game-like.
Yeah, and he was in a lot of video games.
Yes, he was. On the cover of many.
Yeah. Yeah.
What was the one... Ken Griffey, what was it called? On Super Nintendo, I remember at Camden Yards, the first home run derby video game. It was the best, yeah. What a career, what a player. And he kind of made baseball cool back in the early 90s. He was the guy every kid wanted to be when you're playing.
Yeah.
At least when if you were my age in the mid-30s.
Is Bryce Harper that guy now? I mean, he has to go a long ways, obviously, to be a Hall of Famer. But is he the guy that makes baseball cool? Is he? Because I don't think of Mike Trout as being a cool guy, a guy that makes baseball cool.
It's kind of low-key Mike Trout.
Yeah.
I guess it's Harper. I mean, here in...
Josh Donaldson, yeah.
He's pretty cool. I thought the bat flip was pretty cool from Mr. Bautista last week. So we got a pretty cool team, actually, here in Toronto after some lean years there. But the one thing I always think of Griffey is what could have been the years. They played so long in Cincinnati, was always injured. They were never very good.
And he still hit 630 home runs.
I know. And I just wish I had more postseason memories from Ken Griffey Jr. Yeah. And you look, he only played in the postseason.
Played for the Mariners.
Yeah, three times. In 95, they won a series. And he was actually a monster in that one playoffs. He had a slugging percentage of 1.043.
Yeah.
That's... And a batting average of .391. They beat the Yankees in 95, and then they lost to the Indians.
Mariners had some decent teams back then, and the prospects, if they would have been able to keep them.
Oh, yeah. Well, Alex Rodriguez.
Randy Johnson.
Yep. Well, and what?
Edgar Martinez. They've had so many great players in Seattle and so little success. They've never won anything. They came in, of course, with the Jays in 77. And
what did they win? 112 games?
Something ridiculous. Yeah,
and they still have yet to make a World Series in the history of that franchise, which is crazy. So Piazza also going in, and without question, you really can't you can't disagree with this. The best offensive catcher in the history of the game. He got a little choked up.
From tragedy and sorrow came bravery, love, compassion, character, and eventual healing. Many of you give me praise for the two-run home run on the first game back to September 21st to push us ahead of the rival Braves. But the true praise belongs to police, firefighters, first responders.
So Ken Griffey Jr., first overall pick. Mike Piazza was a 62nd rounder. He was picked as a favor to Tommy Lasorda. It was back when you just drafted until like you said, okay, I'm sick of this. I want to go home. Like you could just draft forever.
Could you imagine sitting there 62 rounds?
Yeah, I don't think they put him in the green room at that point. Yeah.
I'm talking about a baseball executive. I know the players aren't there.
Right, yeah,
no,
right.
No, there's no players in this. Oh, I don't know. What would it be? A community club probably at the time. But no, could you imagine 62nd round making the call? Hi, Mike. Is it pronounced
Pizza?
Pizza? Is it? Yeah, you're an LA Dodger. Congratulations, son.
and we always talk about how much of a crapshoot when you hear the term prospects and fans get, I don't want to deal all those prospects. Well, you never know how they're going to turn out. And if scouts got it right all the time, they would have drafted Mike Piazza at least in the 52nd round.
I'm right.
Right? Not they wouldn't have let him slip to the 61st or 62nd round.
Yeah, maybe in the 60th round. It was like, yeah, pick number 1,000.
How do you get it that wrong with this guy, with the best hitting catcher in...
Well, okay.
Other than Johnny Bench.
We're not going to have enough time to get to this, but like, there's always the suspicion surrounding him when it comes to PED use, which, I mean, if you want to go be the super sleuth and figure it out, well, yeah, he was not a highly regarded prospect. He makes the Hall of Fame, hits a bunch of home runs in kind of a suspicious era. He had back knee. But yeah, it is amazing that so he's in. There's a lot of guys who are also suspected of using steroids who will not get in. But he is in. Hey, congratulations to him. Coming up on the other side, we'll get to Ian Leggett, co-host of The Golf Show, 7 a.m. Saturdays, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, talking about his Canadian Open experience, who exactly this Jared Dutoit character is. This hour brought to you by Jack Link's Hangry Moments. You're not hungry, you're hangry. Just grab a bag of Jack Link's beef jerky. Feed your wild side. Who's Jared Dutoit? Well, an hour before we actually talk to the guy himself, we'll get a sense of it from Ian Leggett coming up next. Ben Ennis, David Bastelitz, Dean Blundell and Company, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Send us all your money. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, and we'll send you a free subscription for Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Absolutely free. Now more of Dean Blundell and Company. Listen online at sportsnet.ca/590.
Put my mic on!
Okay, relax. 7:31, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. It's Dean Blundell and Company. Ben Annis, David Basto with you for the whole week. Also, Ryan Favreau. 23 degrees. City of Toronto. Apparently, the rain has stopped. Apparently, it was bad. It was fine for me when I drove in this morning, so I didn't even realize it rained.
No, it was totally fine.
A lot of lightning. But yeah, 4 o'clock in the morning was fine. But apparently, it rained rather hard. And apparently, there is some concern of flooding today. Be safe. As they say, like you need my advice. Yeah, headed up to a high of 32 today. Coming up in mere moments, we'll talk to Ian Leggett, Sportsnet golf analyst, also co-host of the golf show, 7 a.m. Saturday, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. But first, time for a quick update. And this update is for your Toronto area Ford dealers. Edwin Encarnacion homering J.A. Happ went 6 innings, giving up just one hit. Jays beat the Mariners 2-0 yesterday, avoiding a 3-game sweep. They will start a series against the Padres tonight, 7 o'clock, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Sportsnet and Sportsnet Now. Jose Bautista expected to make his return from that toe injury before yesterday's game. Reliever Drew Storen designated for assignment, which means the Jays now have 10 days to either trade or release him. Jonathan Vegas winning the Canadian Open by one shot over a trio of golfers. Canadian amateur Jared Dutoit finishing 3 strokes back in a tie for 9th. He will join us at 8:30 this morning. Ken Griffey Jr., Mike Piazza officially inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame. White Sox ace Chris Sale suspended 5 games by his team for cutting up his team's throwback jerseys. According to reports, Cubs and Yankees talk and trade with Aroldis Chapman, the big piece potentially on the move. Swedish media outlets reporting last night that Toronto was close to a deal for 28-year-old unrestricted free agent goalie Jonas Enroth. The 5'11" Enroth was the Sabres' second-round pick in 2006. His career record, 50-66-15, 9-11 save percentage. Rogers Cup underway, 11 o'clock this morning, Sportsnet and Sportsnet 1. Men in Toronto, women in Montreal this year. Milos Raonic with a first-round bye. Jeannie Bouchard, tough first-round opponent, 28th-ranked Lucy Safarova. They will hit the court tomorrow. Bouchard also deciding she will play at the Rio Olympics. 7:34, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. As mentioned, Jonathan Vegas, your Canadian Open champ at Glen Abbey. But the story, for Canadians at least, Jared Dutoit. Happy to be joined now by Ian Leggett, co-host of The Golf Show, joining us on the line. Hey, Lego.
How you doing, fellas?
Doing all right. So this is, this is Ian Leggett week, man. You were all over the place, Sportsnet TV, radio. You just didn't seem like you slept ever.
No, there was a lot going on this week, and actually most of it was because of Jared Dutoit. I mean, the kid played unbelievably well, and very similar to last year. It was great to have a story like that in the final group with a Canadian at the Canadian Open.
We've been, I think people who are just people think about the real-life impact for Jared Dutoit and what this means for his life, and what I think about is the money that he can't take home. Lego, $159,300 is what the other guys in T9 took home. I guess there's no, like, is there an opportunity on Sunday to say, you know, why don't you just get rid of that A next to my name?
Yeah, he could have done that before he teed off if he wanted to. But, I mean, I the hope is that, you know, that's just barely going to be a blip on the screen by the time his career is over. But I think, you know, for him moving forward, he's just got to take the positive of this week, and that's all he has, to tell you the honest truth. I mean, it does nothing to further his professional career. It was just, it's all about confidence now and what he's able to accomplish. I mean, he's aspiring to play on the PGA Tour one year, and he went out there and played in the final group of the Canadian Open, and, you know, Brent Snedeker didn't close the deal either, and he went out and he, you know, played toe-to-toe with one of the best players in the world on Sunday, and he looked like a tour player.
Ian, how surprising was his performance, considering that most average golf fans probably never heard of him and probably didn't even know he's attending Florida or make that Arizona State?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we don't keep in touch with this, and that's probably the one of the problems that, you know, I have with, people understanding how great our amateurs are. And that happens in a lot of sports. I mean, nobody knew who Ricky Fowler really was until he came out onto the PGA Tour. But when Ricky Fowler came out, I mean, there was a lot of knowledge about what he had accomplished already. Same with Ricky Barnes and Charles Howell. And obviously, Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson didn't need a whole lot of introduction to the world prior to coming out on the PGA Tour. But this is part of the problem that we need to sort of fix, both, you know, as golf fans and in the media, is to get us more knowledgeable about how great these players are. Jared's a very strong player. He's going to have an amazing year at Arizona State, and he's the second highest ranked amateur on the Canadian team in the world. So,
yeah.
He's going to be playing in the World Amateur this year as well. But, you know, this is all sports that. I mean, how many people actually really knew, you know, who Austin Matthews was, you know, literally 2 years ago, until all of a sudden he pushes himself to the forefront, and then every hockey fan knows who he is. So this is what sport's all about, and my hope is that he continues on the journey that he started this week, because, you know, he's put himself out there. Now the expectations are that we hope that we see Jared Dutois playing at the highest amateur levels in the world.
So the Sunday storyline, and it was a very easy one, it was he able to try to end the Pat Fletcher 1954 drought? And it was a huge task. Now, from a player's perspective, at any point of that final round, did the home crown advantage feel more like pressure rather than support for the young golfer?
Well, for him, I think absolutely. And even so, when Mike Weir had that opportunity going into the final round last year with David Hearn. Sometimes when you get in a position like that, and I know David got like that last year, and I know that the way that Jared performed this year, well, I don't think it was quite as in the same story page as David last year, but it was more of that he didn't go out and want to win it.
Yeah.
Rather than he tried not to lose it. And that's the difference between a guy who really is a guy who is able to close on Sunday. And that's the difference between, you know, Tiger Woods and, you know, Jordan Spieth and Jason Day and guys like that. When they get a chance on Sunday, they go out and try to win the golf tournament. And you can talk about the past of Dustin Johnson too. I think that's what he had a lot in him, is that he didn't go out there to try to win the golf tournament. He's trying not to lose, and sometimes he ended up winning because of that. And I think that's the bigger problem with the Canadian trying to win the Canadian Open, is that you don't want to go out there and just blow your brains out and embarrass yourself.
Yeah.
But ultimately, what he did on Sunday, he played extremely well after that rocky start.
Yeah, talking to Ian Leggett, I think no more impressive for me, well, one is just getting off the tee on one with all that crowd support and all the pressure and being in a position he'd never been before. But here he is playing with Brant Snedeker in the final group, Lego, and they're on 18, and Snedeker still in contention, needs a three to force a playoff with Johnny Vegas, and they both stripe their drives, and Dutois hits first, and he puts it, what, like 15 feet for three, and Snedeker, who's trying to win the thing, dunks it into the bunker. Like, the kid was poised start to finish, really. It was incredible.
Yeah, he did. I mean, he was very, very nervous starting out. And the fun thing about it is, I kind of like the way he talked about it. He didn't talk about it like you get the regular, you know, cookie cutter comments about, well, I'm going to hit it one shot at a time. And he was honest. And that was refreshing, you know. He told everybody, I have no idea what's going to happen. Well, I've never been here before. How do I know? You know, and damn, I'm going to be nervous. I'm probably not going to get any sleep tonight. He said everything that we expect someone to say, which is the truth, and it's refreshing. And I think that he gained a lot of fans on the weekend, primarily because he was being honest about how he talked, about exactly how he was feeling and what he was going through. Because that's exactly, you know, if you're the regular punter on a Saturday morning going out for a game of golf, we all feel a little bit like that. And Jared Dutois was exactly, you know, if you want to call him one of us, on going to that final round on Sunday.
Yeah, you're not one of us, though, Lego, so don't put yourself in there. But yeah, he did sound like one of us, like me, when he said, yeah, I thought about using driver on one just so I could get the face on the thing.
Yeah, and he was, you know, I talked to Derek Ingram, his coach, you know, afterwards, and, you know, he was incredibly nervous. I mean, and for him to be able to get a couple pars under his belt at the start of the round, he got a very bad break on number two. Ultimately, he could have started one under par and been in the lead of the golf tournament very early on. But it's interesting to me, just to show you how much talent that he has, is what he did in round two, making triple bogey, following that up after shooting 67, when coming back after that little debacle and making three birdies in a row to get himself back into the golf tournament. He did the same thing again on Saturday and then ultimately rallied back to shoot one under par after being two over on Sunday. So, I mean, whether you want to think that he's nervous or doesn't have the ability to hang in there, he proved us all wrong on Sunday.
Ian, we continue to hear rumors about Glen Abbey as a club itself. What's the future hold for that course?
Well, right now we're going to be having one more Canadian Open there, and that's going to be the end of it. You know, Glen Abbey is going to become a housing development, and, you know, 2018 venue hasn't been chosen yet. We're not really sure what's going to happen, but it's probably sounding more and more like it may be going to Hamilton. But after 2017, that'll be the end of Glen Abbey and ever hosting the Canadian Open.
It's a shame, man. I have so many great memories there. Well, I played it. I think a lot of people in this area have played it. I think a lot of people have a bunch of great memories watching the Canadian Open there, too. Tiger Woods, obviously, the shot from the bunker on 18, and Mike Weir, the playoff against Vijay Singh. There's just a lot of memories there for golf fans in this country, Lego.
There really is, and it is. And, you know, irrespective of how the players feel about it, I mean, Jim Furyk's been very candid about how he dislikes Glen Abbey, so he'll be happy it's moving away because, you know, he's won a Canadian Open at Hamilton, and he's not, you know, he supports the Canadian Open because he loves the event. It fits in his schedule. So, you know, kudos to Jim, and he's performed well at Glen Abbey. He just doesn't like it.
Yeah.
I think players do like more traditional style golf courses, but the one thing that is great about Glen Abbey is, number one, the location of it and its ability to host an event. It was built for that. I mean, for, you know, the way that the seating is around 18, it's fantastic for moving people around, and it's been a logistical ease on Golf Canada in running that golf tournament. So moving forward, it's very disappointing because, you know, as you, Ben, that was my very first experience with going to professional golf tournament.
Yep.
Was going out there and watching Bruce Litsky and Lee Trevino and guys like that playing the Canadian Open.
So Jonathan Vegas actually wins this thing, and I know for a lot of Canadian golf fans it was Jared Dutoit, and rightly so, but it was interesting that, okay, one, he's a known commodity because he's got the name, and he's won before on the PGA Tour, but only a partial exemption this season on the PGA Tour, but that he gets into the clubhouse at 12 under, like an hour before everybody else, and he himself on the broadcast talked about needing to make that eagle putt to get to 13 and just hope to get into a playoff at that point. That he won this thing outright at 12 under was unbelievable to me, Lego. So many guys with opportunities going down the stretch with the short par 5, 18th, Dustin Johnson didn't make eagle, had an opportunity to chip from off the green. Steve Wheatcroft blades it into the water, although he said that the bunker was in poor condition, ends up taking a bogey. I can't believe the winning score was 12 under, considering all the good golfers going through some very birdieable holes there.
Yeah, especially the way the course was set up. I think that, you know, obviously this proves a point. I mean, there was no rough on this golf course. And the factor that made Glen Abbey very difficult was the firmness of the greens. And that's where the challenge was. I mean, tour players have a lot of trouble when they aren't able to gauge what's happening on the ground with their golf ball. And that's why the British Open is always interesting, because that is a different style of game of where you have to play the ball on the ground. And tour players don't necessarily like that. They like to be able to figure out and know where their ball is going. So Glen Abbey, you know, because how hard and baked out it got, and then there was a lot of water put on the green overnight on Saturday to make it a bit softer, and that's the reason why we saw those three 9-under pars by, you know, what Ogilvy and Harmon and can't remember the other player that shot 63 on Sunday, but It was interesting to see how the scores dropped, but more interesting than that, that we had guys, like you said, Snedeker, we had Dustin Johnson, that didn't go out on that back nine and shoot four under par to win the golf tournament. And 18 ultimately did not play a factor in this golf tournament.
Yeah.
And usually it does. I mean, last year, Jason Day makes birdie on the last hole to win the tournament. So I think that that's the hope that it was. And you're right. I really thought there was going to be an opportunity for Brent Snedeker to do something on the last hole to ultimately get into the tournament, because that's what Glen Abbey's all about. Because 18 has played such a dramatic factor in the outcome of that golf tournament year in and year out.
Yeah, and Johnny Vegas did birdie it to win the Canadian Open by a shot. Lego, thanks for this. Rest up the next couple of days, but the PGA Championship's this week, so don't rest too much. We'll need you at the end of the week. See, Ian Leggett, Sportsnet's golf analyst, also co-host of the Golf Show. 7 a.m. Saturday, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. When we come back, we got Jays and Rays tickets to give away, and your fail of the day, Alden Smith, not a smart man. That's coming up next. Ben Ennis, David Bastel. It's Dean Blundell and Company, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake doctor's orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Dean Blundell and Company's Fail of the Day.
That's when I blow it.
You blew it!
7:53, Sportsnet 5-9, The Fan, Dean Blundell and Company, Ben Ennis, David Bastel, Ryan Fabro. Today's Fail of the Day coming from a chronic failer. Alden Smith, Oakland Raiders outside linebacker. Well, he's already suspended, the 26-year-old serving a year-long suspension scheduled to end in November for violating the NFL's policy and program for substances of abuse. You'd figure if that was your deal, you're already serving a suspension, might be a good idea to one, stay low, and especially if you're going to continue doing drugs, stay low. Not for Mr. Smith, though. July 9th, he posted a video on Periscope that appears to show him smoking an unknown substance. Smith, multiple videos to Periscope under the name Ravenga. In which his face can clearly be identified. The video in question features a man, which might be Smith, maybe not, though, smoking. He's also having a conversation with an unidentified female. Here's how it sounds.
I'm not f***ing with you.
We don't go f***. Ain't nobody f***ing with us. We got zero followers. Why does the ashtray up? This is what you call a fire up session.
You shouldn't even be posting.
No. Do you see my face?
No, but what is
it? They don't have my name. This is just a fire up session.
Okay. So if you just put it on there, it's just doing it? It's live? Oh, that's hella stupid.
Shut up. You hella stupid. You trying to smoke, fam? Is this ashtray?
Yep.
You're stupid. You're tripping. They don't know it's me. It's not like I put Alden Smith.
Oh, my God.
I'm not a smart man.
It just crescendos. It's unbelievable.
They don't know it's me. It's not like I put Alden Smith.
You pretty much did.
It's so amazing to go through the thought process there, because the girlfriend's got she's on point in saying, right. Why are we doing this? There's nobody watching. Nobody will ever know. Nobody
got
can
zero
recognize
followers.
Me.
They don't know it's me. It's not like I put Alden Smith.
Oh, except you said your name at the end.
He doesn't sound high at all.
No.
No.
That's fine. But yeah, he's an Oakland Raider, so it's expected. That is your fail of the day. Time to give away some Blue Jays tickets. Blue Jays and Tampa Bay Rays, August 8th. Caller number 11. They are yours.
Hey, no, we give caller number 2 around here, Ben.
I have to do 2? Oh, just so you can play that drop?
Absolutely.
All right, fine. Caller number 2.
2.
Okay. Those tickets are yours. Coming up, we'll talk to Mike Wilner as the Blue Jays salvage one of the 3 games against the Seattle Mariners. What happens to Jose Bautista if he returns tonight? Is he back in the leadoff spot? We'll talk to Mr. Wilner about that coming up next. Ben Ennis, David Bastel, Ryan Fabro. It's Dean Blundell and Company, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.